Generate is supporting my vision to improve the financial literacy of 100,000 Kiwis by sponsoring Keep the Change. Cheers, Generate. Head to generatekiwisaver.co.nz/change to find out more. Getting in the KiwiSaver fund that suits you and your situation is key to making sure you're maximising your investment. Generate are an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of long-term performance, and they can help you do exactly this. Their advisors can meet with you to talk about all your options when it comes to KiwiSaver to help you decide what's best for you. Too many people never get KiwiSaver advice, but not you. Go to generatekiwisaver.co.nz/change to book a no-obligation chat with a Generate advisor. A copy of the product disclosure statement is available at generatekiwisaver.co.nz. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited. And of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns. If I was a property owner. Mikey, good to see you as always, mate.
Mate, audio only, eh?
Audio only,
I
yes.
I feel comfort. I'm back in my comfort zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting dynamic going into a studio, isn't it? You kind of square onto a camera. I'm kind of looking at you like this, but people can't see how I'm acting right now. But
no. Yeah.
I guess it's what you get used to because we've done, 200 of these sitting across from each other, just going hard with some audio in the background, pretending like no one's listening. Yeah. But apparently a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And now you kind of, you know, someone's going to be watching because you're in your seat and it's in video and yeah, very different.
Yeah. That first one where we went in the other day, I was fucking moving the mic and trying to look at myself in the camera to make sure I wasn't coming out of shot. Hadn't been in there for a couple of months, you know, and I was all over the show.
Spilling water everywhere.
Yeah. Knocking water around and ruining all the devices. Absolute mess, man.
Hey, it's all part of it. But anyway, we left there and you said you've had a number of questions lately about property. I couldn't believe that. I thought, really? and investing in property and the rules changing and LVRs and all those acronyms, and it's probably time, right?
And most importantly, I'm starting to swing bullish again.
Oh,
yeah.
Sick pony.
Yeah.
Okay.
So probably for the first time in a few years, I'm getting closer to being like, soon will be a good time to buy a house.
Soon will.
Yeah.
Even you said, I saw something that you'd written that you've got some on your watch list.
First time in years, man.
So I got Mikey's Trade Me login details, everyone. it's mikeysmotors@gmail.com. And then it is, I think the password is DodgeRam_69. And I went in and, yeah, there's an $8 million property, a $3 million property, and a $46 million property.
Yeah, and 17 Lamborghinis, everyone for sale in New Zealand.
Yeah, and weird, I saw like a cat scratching pole or something. Is that a...
That's the one, mate. Yeah. You definitely got in. Yeah, it's the first time in a while that I think property will soon become a store of value again.
Okay.
I think the economy is starting to show signs of the final, what I call the final bleed, and you want to buy during that time, right?
What's the final bleed mean?
The final bleed is
blood in the streets. Like.
Yeah, the recession that the Reserve Bank wanted to engineer is finally here, and I think it's actually going to be a little bit harsher than, you know, the soft landing that gets talked about. I think we're going to have a bit of a harder landing, and probably some period over the next 12 months, I'm going to be bullish on property again. And it will sound stupid to everyone because everyone will be like, market's fucked.
Yeah, I see. Okay, so how does that play out? If the final bleed we're going through at the moment, where some people are probably having to sell and downsize and stuff like that, then what turns it back to being bullish or a store of value?
The bottom of the market.
Okay, yeah. I see. Yeah, yeah. So even if we've still got some people to lose their jobs, unemployment, things like that?
Yeah, that's probably what we're not quite yet there, but somewhere in the next 12 months, I think we're going to bottom out with unemployment and a bit of grim economic data and all the things that will trigger an interest rate cut.
Got you. I see. And that's when you think people will go, right.
Yeah. And I don't think you're going to have to rush in. I don't think like a fucked economy, it doesn't matter if you lower interest rates by 1%. It's not going to be like a massive flood of people. Like a lot of people will be trying to keep their jobs.
Mm.
But I think that'll be the bottom sign. I think it's probably going to be one of the better times to buy over, you know, the last 5 years and the next 5 years. That's all.
help me understand, mate, because obviously I don't live in your world. I'm more in the business space. You've still got to service the debt, right?
Mm-hmm.
So are people coming to you at the moment to guardiansmith.co.nz, which is one of the largest mortgage advisory companies in the country, fastest growing too, and some of the best brokers. Anyway, are these people, they can service their debt, or have you noticed the trend of, hey, sorry, mate, you can't service your debt, and it's a wake-up call for them?
Yeah, so anyone can service debt. It's just how much you want.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So like if you come to me and you're like, oh, I want to borrow $1 million. I'm like, well, your income and expenses show that you can borrow 750. So we can get you a 750 approval.
Yeah. So then they've got two options. Say they want a $1.2 million house.
Yeah.
They've stacked 200K maybe to be able to buy that. Then maybe they need a bit more. So then they're off to mum and dad or someone saying, hey, we need to bridge the gap, can we borrow some money for you, for instance, because Mikey's crew at Guardian Smith said that they're not going to give us all that debt.
Yeah, yeah. So, or I say, you know, in Auckland for $1.2 million, you just got to downgrade to a one bed.
We'll get a bunk bed. Yeah, yeah. You get more people in.
Yeah, or just change, you know, man, once you've been in the mortgage game for a while, you realize the different prices and values and areas and suburbs, they can be right next to each other.
Yeah.
I used to think that like, when old people would tell me about that, like location, 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 and all that bullshit was just yarns. But once you've been in the game for a while, school zones, like so much shit changes the value of a property. You know, future urban planning zones, like all of this crazy shit that makes buying a house like too hard.
And when people come to you to buy a property, have they researched that stuff? Like someone's told them all?
Some have, some haven't. You know, first home buyers can often get analysis paralysis because there is so much of it, and eventually I'm like, it's your first home, not your last home. You can sell it, you know, like it's not something that you're stuck with forever.
Oh yeah.
You know, if you don't like it in 5 years or you want to grow a family, there's no reason you can't move out of this into a school zone or whatever the story is, you know. But yeah, I mean, some people do, some people don't. Some people don't care, some people do care, like just like anything.
So the key here is that you think the bottom of the market is within the next 12 to 18 months. You said 12, but let's just push it out a bit because I know, mate, that we're always early, so let's say 12 to 18, but there's still going to be no rush because it's not like we're just going to have a return to those 2020 and 2019, 2021 times, which I think people are going to have in their head going, shit, house prices are going to rocket again. Completely different environment. There's less cash. There's still going to be a higher rate. There's going to be more people out of the workforce. A lot of Kiwis have left and gone to Australia, for instance, but there's people coming in. But you're going to be competing with less higher income earners to then be able to drive up those house prices. The settings will be different, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, there's a caveat to that, though.
Okay, what?
If OCR ends up at 2.5% or 3%, then it'll fucking send.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because people will just rush to the open
homes.
We'll
be back on like 3.8% interest rates, and we're like, oh, baby.
Yeah.
Let's go store this money because it is devaluing like crazy.
See, I just wonder if people will be scarred by this last couple of years, but I'm an idiot. Of course not. They'll be like, right, how much can I borrow?
No, I think there's a subconscious distrust of the value of the dollar, and everyone's going to be like, fuck, I've been working and everything's been costing more in inflation and this thing has started going up in price again. I'm in.
Yeah,
to try and make back the lost time that I had while, you know, coffee went from $5 to $7.50.
Got ya.
So,
and I bet, mate, I shouldn't even say this because someone will take this and run with it. They'll be like, this is your last chance to get into the property market.
We'll have all the articles again. I've kept receipts, by the way.
I don't doubt it.
We'll have articles again about a housing shortage and it'll start all over again, but only when the debt's available to get, you know. There's never a housing shortage when debt's expensive, is there?
We need to do a pod on that because I think, yeah, that's a mind warp. We need to understand that.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. So I've derailed us for 8 minutes.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about property investment.
Oh, mate, brilliant. I'll put myself on mute and I'll be back in 15. Enjoy, guys. Enjoy. I'm going to go over there and buy some Heartland Bank shares and watch those erode for the... No, kidding. Yeah, talk to me about it. I'd love it. Let's go.
Nah, so I get asked on like Instagram and stuff. This is the most common thing. And we've done pods in the past if you can find them, but there have been some changes and some updates. So we'll go through a couple of the current rules and what we expect to see coming up, and then a couple of things where people go wrong when they don't do it with like a good mortgage broker or an advisor, right? So at the moment, as of today, which is April the 27th while we're recording, buying an investment property is quite hard to do. because of the interest rates, because of the way everything's calculated, because of the tax deductibility laws that got put in place. Basically, it's very hard to get debt for an investment property unless you have lots of equity in your current home or a big deposit and a really good income to be able to service the debt. But as I said before, I think we're coming into a time when that stuff will get easier and everyone will come back and want to know how to do it. So we have right now 35% deposit requirements if you want an investment property. Now, the number one thing where I see people get stuck in this process is they go, I can have 20% equity in my own home, right? They can borrow up to 80% for your owner-occupied home. And then people go, I'm going to keep my home and buy a new home and then keep the existing home as a rental. It's very common. I see it all the time. They come to me and they've done their calculations on 80% because they're living in their current home. But you actually have to do it at 65% because it's becoming the rental.
Gotcha.
The new one is the owner-occupied that you can do it at 80% with a 20% deposit.
I see.
So you move into your house, Luke's first home, and he's paid $1 million for it, and he had...
It's a shithole too. Yeah. No.
And he paid $200,000 for the deposit, so he's a good man and got 20% in. Stayed in it for a couple of years and paid it down, paid another $100,000 off, so you've got 30% equity in your property, and you come to me and you go, I want to keep this one as a rental, I've paid off some debt, and then use that extra $100,000 for the deposit on the next one that I'm going to move into, and I go, sorry, man. That just doesn't work like that because this one needs to be at 650K, not 700. So you actually need to pay more and then plus some more to get the deposit for the new property.
Sheesh.
20% on that one. So that's a big road to go down, right? And the reason this worked so well in the past is because property values did it for you. You didn't actually have to pay off the debt.
Oh, of course, because my million by the year's time when I came to you and paid down from $800,000 of debt to $700,000 debt, that's now worth 1.5 probably.
Yeah.
No, 1.2
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So just step me through this again, sorry mate, just so I can keep the listeners with us. So I've now got $700,000 in my owner-occupied
mortgage
property in debt, right?
In debt, yeah.
And $300,000 of equity. So my debt, okay. So then I think, so really I would-
Effectively it's useless.
Yeah, because I'd need it to be $350,000 of debt paid off because I had $200,000 deposit, and then if I pay off another $150,000 of debt, then I'd have $350,000 of equity and $650,000 of debt. So basically, that would be like that's
your 65% LVR ratio. So that would allow that property to be a rental property then.
Yeah, but then I'd still need a 20% deposit for my next owner occupied property.
Yeah, and that one's $2 million because you don't want to go backwards.
Shit, no, mate. This is New Zealand. So now I need 400 rack for that.
Yeah.
Holy.
Yeah. Okay,
so it's made it really hard to actually go and buy a rental or have a rental or use leverage.
Yeah. So there's a couple of cheat codes that people use, right?
I can guess.
Here we go.
No, I'm not taking the piss. Like a flatmate.
No.
Oh, okay. So, I'm thinking too small.
Equity is an issue, right? You need the equity. So there's a couple of things that you can do. You could stay in this property as your owner occupied, and then same numbers, it's $1 million, you've got 300 paid off. So there's $100,000 of available equity if you're staying in it, right? But not if you're turning it into a rental. Then you take that 100,000 out and go and buy a rental.
But I still need 35% deposit for my rental.
You would, but you're buying a new build.
We need to build houses, man. We got to show it.
Exactly. So those have exemptions from these LVR rules that we're talking about, and you only need 20% for one of those as an investment.
Boom. So now I'm getting a $500,000 new build.
Yeah.
In Harwooda.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
You can buy $500,000 new builds on the outskirts of Auckland. They're around.
Okay.
I know some places out west.
Hamilton, is it? Hamilton.
That's suburb. Oh. That's South Auckland suburb.
A shout out to my Hamilton fans. No, I love that place. I often say I reckon it's a great city.
But in the meantime as well, you've been chipping away at the share market and you've got another $50,000 say saved up there. So your deposit becomes 150 because you tie them together because you're going to risk it all and not diversify.
Yeah, I'm all in on property in New Zealand. Yeah.
What's 150 20% of? Is it 750?
Divide that by 0.2.
Yeah, 750.
Okay.
So all of a sudden you can go buy a 750K new build and that's like decent.
Yeah. It's two houses in Harwooda.
Yeah. Not,
yeah. Yeah.
And the other part that people misunderstand is they get confused that taking that money, that $100,000 out of your current loan and using it as cash on the new one. Yes, it's a deposit on the new one, but effectively you're still borrowing nearly 100% of the rental property.
Yeah, so I've got to pay interest on that. Yeah.
Even though you're meeting the requirements of total equity position, you're borrowing all of it.
Yeah, I see. So the jigsaw fits. However, my debt has increased by more than probably perception.
Yeah, and
it's not like
people think, oh, I've just got the deposit in my house.
Yeah.
Well, not really. You have to go borrow it still.
Yeah, that's right. You've borrowed the equity. So you're now basically back on the other side. You've taken yourself back to the start.
Yeah, you're on the rev limiter again on the owner-occupied property.
Yeah, but for tax purposes, you want to have your debt sitting under your investment because that's where interest is tax deductible, which I'm sure Mikey's going to come to. But this is where I've had a client who's cooked themselves because what they did in their life is that they paid off all of their debt. Outstanding achievement, and then they swapped from owner-occupied to we're going to rent that out, didn't get any structuring advice, went and bought a rental property and
moved into the rental and all the debt
on. Moved into the new owner-occupied, financed it under there, no debt on the rental, top tax income earner in New Zealand, bang, 39% tax on every dollar of profit in that rental.
That's a bit scary.
And what's the largest cost for a rental investment? Interest or no interest. So basically, they have to put 40% of their rent aside to pay tax.
That's
39, but you know.
It's a lot, yeah.
So they've only got their repairs, their rates to cover, and they, because they effectively got the wrong advice, they are like, fuck this, you know, because they've got enough debt on their own occupied side too, where they're just like, oh, we're going to sour. Yeah. So that's the importance. If you're going to do this shit, to speak to an accountant and get good structuring advice, or even just, when we say structuring, it's not, should it be in a company, a trust, an LTC, all the stuff that you read about and see how they do it in America. It's different here. It's actually structuring of the debt.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, the other place, just on that. So we were talking about new builds. We've got new builds currently are still exempt from those tax rules where they like didn't let you claim the interest or whatever it was. So you can do that now. That's all getting phased back in anyway. The new government has basically said, I think 80% this financial year and then 100% next year.
Yeah. So this financial year being 2025 financial year, which will finish 31st of March 2000. Oh, I think that's right. Actually, I'll check that as we're talking.
And then the economy will be so buggered, they'll get kicked out, a new government will come in and go back to the old rules.
Oh, well, it will be interesting to see if they flip-flop between those, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, that's becoming less relevant because those rules are coming back. But in general, I think the change in rules are going to be slightly stimulative towards the housing market because everyone gets fired up about a positive property market changing rule.
Yeah.
So that's all good stuff. The other mistake that people make when it comes to buying an investment property, they use this cheat code, right, by going to buy a new build. The day that you take ownership of it and start renting it out, guess what it no longer is in the bank's eyes or in the loan-to-value ratio eyes?
My first owner-occupied property?
Nah, the new build that you've bought. It's no longer a new build.
Oh, I see.
It's an old property now.
Really?
Yeah.
What's it, only a new build until someone moves in?
Yeah.
Gee, I suppose it makes sense.
Yeah, it's like a secondhand car, right? It's only brand new until the day you own it.
Of course.
So what happens there, and that's fine, but if you want to go and do some more lending in the future, say you pay down a little bit of debt here and there and your rent goes up and everything's looking good and it's getting easier and interest rates come down, you're like, oh, I want to do this again. Or the main problem is when people go, I'm going to sell my owner-occupied home and upgrade that now because, you know, that million-dollar house, that ain't doing it for us. Rental's going good. Interest rates come down. Time to move into a $1.5 million baby.
Oh.
Massive issue if you've done the owner-occupied property and the new build rental property with the same bank. Because you go to sell your current one, and then on the day that you're doing the discharge of the mortgage that you think is on your owner-occupied property, the bank actually is holding both properties as collateral. But that new build ain't a new build anymore. You only used 20% for the deposit on that one, but the rules say that it needs to have 35 in it because it's actually not a new build anymore. It's a 65% maximum LVR ratio property. So when you go and do your calculations and you thought that you were going to get your 200 grand back to use as a deposit on the next one or whatever, maybe a bit more, the bank goes, oh, you need to pay 15 more percent off that one over there. All of a sudden you've got no cash and you're renting, brother.
Like me.
Yeah. So shit. I've people get stuck here and they can't upgrade their own home. And people have got stuck here. I've had genuine conversations when people have got stuck here after they went and bought a new build investment property during 21. The LVR change happens on day one that you own it. You don't know about this because no one's told you. And the values of the properties have come down.
Oh, shit. Not in New Zealand.
They did.
Yeah.
So we're in a weird time now where it's more affected than usual because, you know, 50 years up and to the right, it's the usual story.
Yeah.
But yeah, that right now there are people that are stuck where they are and they can't sell their rental because they're going to lose money on that and they want to do their own occupy, but then they'd have to pay back the rental debt and they end up with zero in a rental property. Like, whoop-de-doo. That's no fun to anyone. Again, same thing as the accountant, like get some good advice, because all we had to do at the start to prevent this from happening is just put one at one bank and one at the other.
I see.
We go and borrow the little deposit that you needed on your own occupied home at Bank A. We take that over to the next bank, leaving your mortgage on your own occupied. And then the second bank takes the deposit as cash, even though it's borrowed against your other home.
Yeah.
They let you borrow the other 80%. And then Bank A and Bank B can't be like, oi, you're paying us back for this. That's not how it works. Like, Bank A don't give a fuck about what Bank B's up to in terms of getting paid back for their debt.
Yeah.
So keep it separate the collateral, separate the liability, and then you can continue to operate properly and make sure that, like, if you have a kid, you don't have to live in that one bed anymore.
It's interesting, eh? Because I feel like for some time now, it's almost been made to seem that investing in property is pretty easy in New Zealand, and you just basically get equity, you go to the bank, they tell you you can borrow some more, and then you go and do that. But then if you don't understand leverage, you can get yourself into some fucking gnarly situations, eh?
Yeah, and normally it hasn't truly been that much of an issue, because when values go up and dramatically, then the LVRs don't matter, right? Because you're 50% LVR, so there's room to breathe everywhere.
Mm.
You know, if your property doubles, all of a sudden the debt's cut in half effectively.
Yeah.
So as long as you can service it, of course. But, you know, right now, that is a thing. And if we don't have huge property inflation over the next 10 years and you do want to get into investing and do it long term, then you want to be thinking of this stuff, because you don't want to get stuck. You don't want to get stuck, and you do have to think about, like, your, it's so financial advisor to say this, but like your future goals.
Yeah.
Like,
but also actually, you know, you got to be careful about bright line tax rules and stuff as well. Like, say you get stuck, you can't handle it, and you may have to pay, if there is a property profit, you may have to pay tax on that if it triggers.
And if there's a loss, you can't claim a loss.
Mm.
It's not like normal accounting, you know. So, yeah, you do have to. Property investment is easy, but to do it really well is a business.
Yeah.
And you have to put time and effort into it. And it's not the business for me, but it can work if you're really good at it and you are diligent and do your numbers and understand how to operate it correctly, right? And the thing is that we'll just go back to a time when interest rates fall and everyone will jump back in anyway.
Yeah.
But I think if you just make sure you understand a bit of this stuff about separating your collateral from your own home and get advice from your accountant around, like, where to put the debt. Like, if you're buying a property that's going to become a rental,
yeah,
or like, don't move out. Like, make sure you structure it correctly.
Yeah, don't just go, oh, we can figure this out. Like,
yeah,
yeah. Because I mean, just like that example I gave you before. Wow,
get a 20 grand tax bill at the end of the year, and you're like, where does that money come from? I've got a big mortgage to pay.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's literally what they're saying. They're like, but how do we have to pay tax when we're paying off our own loan? And I'm like, yeah, but the government don't care that you went and borrowed a shit ton yourself.
Yeah.
And nor did the bank.
Yeah.
But the IRD are like, pay up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are like the main sort of hiccups that we see happening to people. And I think, I mean, it sounds real wanky, but like, you can just call us.
Yeah,
well, you can call a property accountant. No, don't call Luke.
No, please don't. Please. But ask me who, and I can point you in the right direction.
Yeah, and same for the mortgage side of it. Like, get a mortgage broker, like a Guardian Smith broker that understands it and has been taught it and knows how to deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I've been a property investor myself. I've got one now, but I don't have, like, the portfolio like I used to. But I fucking learned the hard way and then became a mortgage broker and then basically helped lots of people buy rental properties. Like, I've done it.
Yeah.
And
avoid the mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, as well, a lot of people just think, oh, mortgage advisor just helps you get the best rate from the bank. Well, not necessarily. They help you find out where it is you want to go over long term, and then, oh, okay, well, if that's the case, then this is what you're going to need to do even once you're into your first home. This is what you need to be thinking about. And, hey, before you go down that path, here's what you need to be mindful of, like different banks and stuff like that. Like, leverage off of their knowledge, not just their access to different lenders.
Yeah, and I think, like, the funniest one is when I say to people, I'm like, oh, you know, if this is going to stop you. Most people, when they're about to get into property investing, are very keen and very hungry, and that's awesome to see, and I love it. Like, I'm all for people having a crack. But being aware of the roadblocks, like, you know, do you know this might mean that you have to stay in your current home for 10 years? Like, depending on what happens with property values. But if I say that to someone, they're like, oh, well, how come? Like, it's never, ever been talked about. Because mum and dad never had that issue.
Yeah.
Mum and dad bought three rentals without that being an issue. They moved around, they upgraded and all that. But knowing that stuff is so valuable. And, you know, it's really sad when I see someone come to me and ask for help and they're stuck in the position where they can't do something and, you know, family's growing and the house is too small or whatever and they can't do anything, like, unless you're going to take a massive loss on some stuff. And it could have been prevented.
So the thing with this stuff is that the rules are always changing, right? So, you know, you're going to see interest deductibility rules change, which we just touched on before. So basically, interest will be more tax deductible. I won't go into entirely how that works, but basically, let's just say before the rules changed, let's say you had $10,000 of rental income. I'm just using this as an example. Someone commented the other day and they were like, oh, where the fuck would you only have $10,000 worth of rent? People were just like, they can't understand it. An example. Eh?
And anything that ends with a zero is a lie anyway.
Yeah. You have $8,000 of interest and then you've got your rates that are $1,000, let's say, and some repairs that are $1,000. So you got $10,000 of income in rent minus the interest deductibility, which is at 100% in this example, minus rates, repairs equals zero profit.
Yeah.
So you don't have any tax to pay. But then Labor changed the rules. And so they said, we're going to try and take it down to no, you can't have a deduction for your interest. So if they got the whole way through that, basically you would have had $10,000 of rental income minus rates, minus repairs, so $2,000, but no, you still have to pay the interest, but you can't claim the deduction. So you'd have an $8,000 profit, which you'd have to pay tax on, which would be taxed at your marginal tax rate if you own the property, or split between yourself if it's you and your wife, or you're your husband, or in a company, et cetera, that goes round and round. But now, Acton National, and they're like, now we're going to phase it back in so that for the 2026 financial year, which starts 1st of April 2025, so next year, it'll be 100% tax deductible. So at the moment, it is now, because we're in the 2025 financial year, it is 80% tax deductible. So 80% of that $8,000 of interest, so $6,400 would be tax deductible, $1,600 of it would not be. So that's a non-tax deductible expense. In the 2024 financial year, which is just finished on the 31st of March 2024, it was only 60%. So some of the landlords around the country, there are exemptions for new builds and stuff like that too, but some of our clients who have traditional, you know, they've done the business route, they've stacked some cash and they've basically protected their New Zealand dollar by buying property.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, so I've got to pay tax on my rental too. And we're like, yeah, well, you do, because they've been good and they've paid down some debt on that as well.
Yeah.
So they might have their rental income and then they've got their interest, but it's only 60% tax deductible. So 40% of what they've paid is not tax deductible. So it doesn't decrease their profit. And so then I'm basically saying, well, here's your profit on your rental, therefore times your tax, and we're trying to get these people into the top tax brackets. I'm like, whack it, 39%. Yeah. Don't you love me? And they're like, oh, having a crack at me. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey, I did not tell you to buy this property. But hopefully that helps you understand how it works. But
it just sounds like an accounting nightmare, though.
Oh, mate, it's messy. Yeah. Some calculations going everywhere. But but basically, these rules are always changing. We actually did a podcast on, you know, is property going to be the investment that it once was? Because we were talking about all the rules going the other way.
Mm.
Now they're going back in favor of
rental. So this is classic New Zealand economic wave theory, where it's getting dark outside, the economy's a bit grim, we're in a recession, interest rates are still high, inflation's still around, and the government's like, oh, the only way to really fire up the New Zealand economy is flood it with credit. So let's do a couple of things. Deregulate and get the property market humming.
Going again.
Yeah. So even the Reserve Bank is doing some stuff, right? The light that is coming for investors of existing traditional residential property, not new builds, is that that 35% deposit rule is going to become 30. So it sounds, I think it's June 1st or July 1st. Basically, they're lowering the amount that you need to do that.
So that's going to mean I shouldn't say large, but a portion of people are now going to check their equity and go, I can make this work.
Yeah. I've got 30. I didn't have 35. Yeah. And the other thing that's funny about that is the pressure starts to build into the property market as more people come back in because it's more accessible. Prices go up, equity builds up, Ponzi scheme begins.
Yeah, don't we love it?
Because everyone starts to get 30, you know? Yeah. I only bought with 20 and I've got the 10 for free.
Ooh. Oh.
So, yeah, anyway. That's you love this.
There we go again. Yeah.
So I'm excited, mate. Guardian Smith's going to crank.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if property's going well in the country, normally the, normally the country's going well.
Yeah,
but
that's kind of true.
Yeah, in a way. But also the downside to that is it just drives more division, I think.
All we're doing is borrowing from our future and then cutting the future generations out from being able to do it.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know what that looks like in 40 years, but
we'll get to live through it, hopefully.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah.
But again, like if you can do it, and personally, I think over a long period of time, it's going to be a storehold of wealth. You do have to keep an eye on the massive forever inflating council rates and costs around that stuff. Because no matter how good you are and how you can pay off your debt and own your property, you spend your whole life doing that, rates never stop. And if they keep going up, you have to make sure you can service that too, right? Just like you had a mortgage that you needed to work out how you could service. You retire one day, have you got the income to cover the rates?
Yeah.
Because what if those are 30 grand a year?
In my new apartment, mate, I bumped into one of the owners of an apartment in there, and they were talking about, they've been away on holiday and whatnot, and they were like, we've got to do our budget today because, you know, once you're retired, you've got to figure out you're allocating your money, and, the body corp's due soon. Oh. You know, it's like, and I'm like, I wonder what that's moved from in the time that they've been in there. But again, it's an example of we think we're going to get to 65 and retire and it's like everything fucking stops. But no, there's still things you have to pay for.
Which is a good reason to have a rental property, right? Like if you want two or three rental properties, that's a great way to add on top of, if you don't have like big goals to be rich, but if over 30 years you can have a couple of rentals or whatever. I mean, that's getting harder to do now, but, you know, you might end up with 100 grand a year of rent rolling in, 25 grand a year rates on three shithouse new builds. And nice. And then, you know, you got 75 grand that you pay tax on and that's supplemented by your super that one day won't be there and all of a sudden you can survive. So, sorry, this is a bit of a mean one. But
we shouldn't joke about these things, but we should because it almost makes it a bit funnier.
Yeah.
For the people that have been listening for long enough, they will get some of these subtle jokes and stuff, but new people probably, what?
These guys are idiots.
But it just highlights that you do have to protect yourself because you don't know if the pension's going to be there. You don't know what your rates are going to be by the time you're 65. You don't know what your insurance bill is going to be. Fuck, I've never had an insurer message me and say, mate, you're doing a great job at staying healthy, mate. You've never made a claim. You know, we're going to decrease your insurance. I was having a look the other day. It's more than doubled since I first took out my insurances and they're light as. They are insurance
wild,
for
man.
Being
insurances,
a GC.
Insurances, rates, everything, yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway, so 30% deposits on existing properties is coming. Now, historically, when we've needed to do proper stimulation, just like in COVID, and then there was a period around like 2012 or whatever, basically they just turn LVRs off, man.
Just tank them. Like,
yeah, just just let the banks control their own, you know. The banks can decide on how much they want to give out at what rates and stuff like that. So that is like the ultimate level of deregulation. They're like, fuck, the economy needs some credit.
Send it through the housing market.
Send it through the housing market. Yeah. So like in 2020, when they closed everyone's businesses, they were like, somehow we need to keep the velocity of money going through the system. Overcooked it a little bit, but they basically said like, no LVR rules, banks, you control your own. And the banks did implement, they were pretty responsible actually looking back, more responsible than Reserve Bank in my opinion. But they basically implemented their own and like we could go and get approvals for 90% pre-approvals and people could go and buy houses with 10% deposits quite easily. That's starting to come back now. Like we're already starting to see that again. So these rules are forever moving goalposts.
Yeah.
It will be the same with the debt to income ratios. So the debt to income ratios are coming in at the same time that these LVRs are dropping for investors. The DTI on investment debt is going to be 7 times total gross income, household gross, with including the rent and stuff like that. And, you know, it's interesting. That's more than what you're allowed as an owner-occupied. You can go to 6 on your owner-occupied. And you know what? If we get into a dark enough place, they'll just be like, oh, DTIs can go to 9. Guarantee it, man.
Guarantee it.
Guarantee
clip
it.
Out. Clip this out. Yeah.
Because
I'll write down DTI because I can search this. DTI 2.9. So remind me when DTIs go to 9 and I'll, it's the 20.
Oh, yeah, nice.
I'll find it for you.
Yeah,
it's
at
a minute 35.
Yeah.
5 minutes-ish. Cool.
But the other thing that's happening right now in the background, this is like, we've talked a little bit about investment property and how to do it and what requirements you need. Now Mikey's on like why I'm going to be bullish because we're seeing this economy get dark, which is almost the opposite of what people would think for the housing market to be bullish. But I have been around long enough and have, I guess, researched and studied long enough to watch what people do, not what they say. And we're seeing this, right? We're seeing the LVR thing come into place. A little bit of conspiracy theorist in me thinks DTIs are coming in so they can cut rates way further than we'd like to believe if they need to. And then you can't blow out the market and leverage up.
Got you. Should have done that prior. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine DTIs and COVID. We talked about that. And then the other part is this new government is, you know, I have zero faith in any government, but that's just a disclaimer.
Yeah.
But they do seem to be stripping out some red tape around lending. So we had end of 2020 or start of 2021, we had this triple CFA dumped on us and it was pretty aggressive change. I've never ever worried about any of that stuff. I'm just like, what are the regulations? I'll make sure I meet them and just keep working because I just want to do business. But there was lots of industry upset about it and people were upset about it because I think I've told this story before. Like we submitted a loan to a bank in like February or whatever, give people their statements. This guy's statement had, he's an Aucklander buying in Auckland, living in Auckland currently, and his statement had some flights, Queenstown shot over jet, a bungee at like Christmas time, New Year.
Shit you do in Queenstown as a tourist.
Yeah.
If you can afford
and
to.
Yeah. Keeping in mind, lives in Auckland, buying in Auckland, works in Auckland, and the bank, not by fault of their own, they were forced to by the regulation, came back and said, is this a monthly expense? So like that's how stupid it was for a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And then better interpretation of the rule and all of this kind of stuff. Now I saw an article that someone sent me the other day that the new red tape dude or whatever, Andrew someone, is ripping up like 11 pages.
Andrew Bailey.
Is it?
Yeah, it's down to good Pukekohe lad. Think.
Oh, nice. South Aucklander. Hearty bugger.
Yeah.
Almost a farmer down there.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Been down there for a long time, I believe. But anyway, yep.
So, yeah, I mean, they're taking out some stuff, which is cool because it puts it back into the bank's control. The banks are actually pretty good at self-regulating, believe it or not, because you know why? They like making heaps of money and don't want to go broke. Isn't that the strongest incentive in the fucking world?
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to give out shitty loans, are they?
Yeah, true.
So
that's right. Yeah,
and if you give them more control over that, they can probably have a little bit more discretion. They're never going to be. They're pretty much so large that they sort of not paint everyone with the same brush, but have a set of rules and policy guys that we abide by, right? But having some discretion to make their own calls on a few things will be nice because we can have more common, what I call common sense conversations with the assessors who we're doing the loans with. So that's coming back, which is more liquidity for the housing market, which is bullish, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's a bit of a trend happening here. The only thing that hasn't changed yet is interest rates.
And when they do,
That's
what most people will understand, but they won't understand the foundations moving.
What I'm seeing is like everything's lining up for when interest rates do move and they go lower, it's going to be easier to get the credit because all of these little rules are changing, the deposit requirements are lower. Like the foundation is set for this thing to launch again.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mikey, driving FOMO since 2024.
Mate, I am not a FOMO person, eh? Like, someone was asking me about their first home the other day, and I was like, honestly, in my experience, just like you to me, I'm not at work here, we're just mates. Like, if you're buying a house, like, either do it 3 years, are you having a family first? And she was like, yeah. And I said, you're either doing it 3 years before you have the kid or 3 years after. Don't do it in that 6 year period because it's a fucking nightmare. I see too many people take it too hard.
Wow.
That was just like a mate-to-mate advice, you know?
Why don't you do a reel on that?
I don't know if I can... Yeah, well, I guess I can just it now.
I just jogged my memory. I've met Andrew Bailey.
Oh, yeah.
I was walking back from the gym one time.
Fucking must have been memorable.
Well, yes, because I said to him, hello, etc. And then we got yarning and he said, oh, where do you live? I said, oh, I just live at those apartments. He says, do you own it? No, why don't you buy it? Why don't you own it?
Actually.
Started talking about fucking property ownership.
Did you say, oh, because the triple CFA fucking saw the TAB transactions?
Oh, that's good.
Oh, dear.
Nah, I said, oh, no, nah, mate, you know, one day, hey, look, those are leases. And I'm like, is everyone a national just like, buy a house or something? Mate, maybe, who knows? But yeah, just came back to me. Funny.
It's funny because, like, you see the people who don't like national saying, like, oh, they're just basically pumping up their own assets and stuff. It's kind of true, right? Like,
yeah. Well, however, whilst Labor were in power,
it pumped the most.
Yeah, and exactly, yeah. And net worth of New Zealanders was skyrocketing.
Yeah.
And of course, now it's coming back down the other side. But I found that funny during that period when people were fuming. And it's like, I don't think they're smart enough to predict the future, but basically they were getting wealthier.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, fucking National make everyone, you know, they just look after their rich mates. And it's like, well, no one's been wealthier than under this last bit. Anyway, boring political bullshit.
It is. So, yeah, I think, what's that? We've covered off. Mikey thinks it's probably going to be an all right time to buy soon. We've covered off like the numbers and requirements around it for deposits. The only other thing, I mean, this regulation around DTIs is going to prevent a fair bit of it, but I do really want to, oh, net and gross yields. Fuck.
Oh, strap yourselves in, guys. Yeah. Net and gross yields.
This is what
yields.
I was trying to remember. Right. So can you run us through what a gross yield would be? So should we do?
We'll have to Google.
Should
it.
We do like a yeah? Pull or do it you up want on me to Google? We'll do a 750k property.
So you want a calculator on here? Or what do you need?
No, pull up the explanation for gross yield.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Definition from BNZ is the total amount of revenue your property generates before any costs are taken into account. A net yield is the amount of take-home revenue after all associated costs have been deducted, such as tax rates, mortgage repayments, insurance, maintenance, and more.
So this, I mean, people might not know this either, but gross yield seems to be what's marketed everywhere. So when you're looking at a rental property and they're targeting to sell to you, you will get presented with a gross yield because it sounds sexier because it's a bigger number.
Mm.
So they'll be like, oh, this has got a 6% yield.
So that would be $6,000 of rental income per $100,000 of
equity
property.
Value. Yeah.
Yeah. So is it of the house value or is it
a house value?
Yeah, yeah. So if my property's worth $1 million, I'm renting it out for $60,000 for the year. I've got a 6% gross yield.
Yeah. Now that's what gets marketed to you, and it all sounds very good because term deposits are only 5.5.
Mm.
You know, there's risk free over there, and there's risk free over in the housing market because that never fails.
No.
So I would way rather have the 5.5 with the tax free capital gain. Thank you very much.
Mm.
So that's what gets marketed to you, right? But it's a metric.
Sorry, you'd rather have the 6%. With the tax-free capital.
Yeah, I was saying sarcastically.
Oh, gotcha.
You're getting the 6% in the housing market when there's 5.5 in the TD.
And a capital gain without having to pay tax on it.
Exactly. You're like, why would anyone do a TD? And exactly, let's go pump the Ponzi, right?
Yeah.
But
pump the Ponzi.
You do have to understand the difference between the gross and the net because this is where I think in this next run that we'll have in property, people will get confused because it also, you know, traditional numbers are not going to be the same. We've had like 30% inflation in expenses and rates and
insurance,
all of this shit. Yeah, insurances and repairs and, you know, builders' costs, whatever they are.
Debt.
Yeah, that'll come down, mate.
Oh, sorry.
So understanding that difference, it's kind of like gross profit is like a vanity metric as well. It's not, but it's kind of like that. It's like before you take all the expenses off, so, you know, if your expenses are higher than your gross profit, then you lose.
Yeah, so
you go broke.
We say in business, like revenue is vanity effectively because you have $10 million of revenue, like, oh, it must be a big business. Yeah, with $11 million of costs, it's the same one that fucking went under and was liquidated. Yeah. And they pay me like, oh,
yeah.
Well, I thought they were killing it. They do $10 million of revenue.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly. So we're looking at this like top line number and it actually doesn't mean anything. Your job is wanting to be a property investor or managing your portfolio correctly is being very diligent with working out your net yields. So like you just said, we've got mortgage costs, you know, council rates, repairs,
Is this the Tabby? Sorry, mate, I just needed to check the result.
We're really keeping like drilled to this.
I'm back. Yeah.
So,
but I'm surprised in here as well. It's actually mortgage repayment, so not just interest.
Well, technically, we want to find out what we've got left over, right?
Yeah.
So, net yield is not net profit like it would be on a P&L, like an accountant sees.
Yeah.
Because that's also important because if you basically people want to do this to work out their retirement, right? And you want to work out the actual real number that you have left over. And the principal part of a loan repayment plus the interest is the part that the accountant likes. But the principal part, you can't claim anything there.
No.
But it still gets deducted.
Many people think they can too. They say, well, what do you mean? Like I've
another
paid my
mistake.
Yeah,
yeah.
I've paid my mortgage repayments. That's a cost. No, it's not in
only
terms of
7% of it was.
Yeah. Only the interest portion is. Yep.
So another thing. So working out your net yield, like this calculation is all over the website. There's a really cool investment calculator on the Guardian Smith website where you can actually compare it to a term deposit as well. And work out whether it is worth the numbers. The cool thing about the calculator on our website is you can put in whatever metric you want for capital growth.
Oh, that will get people horny.
Yeah.
18% annually.
I recommend using a conservative number like 5.
Okay. Well, hey, come on, man. Like, you know.
So, yeah. But really important to know, just like the deposit thing, this one I can help you with, but you're better just to learn it yourself. And you're going to end up on Trade Me looking at stuff, ringing real estate agents and asking what the rental appraisals are, finding those numbers out, working out the annual number, dividing it by the price of the property, getting your gross yield, then basically going back to that number of what's left over, taking out all the expected costs, getting your net yield.
Nice.
And your net yield is actually what you should compare to the term deposit.
Mm.
You know, like that's what you want to be looking at because that's what the real risk-free rate is. And if you look around and do your numbers right now, it's pretty hard to get something over 2 or 3.
Yeah. And
because interest rates are so high and the cost of everything has gone up. So yes, it may be countered over time by capital growth or money printing.
Yeah.
But make sure you're aware of it because you don't want to end up in the hole all the time working for like big top-ups and stuff for 10 years and paying tax bills at the same time and you're just be like the person you said, like, how come? How come I have to pay this? Like, I've paid my mortgage. You know, like, why? What's going on here? Why do I have this big tax bill when I've paid everything?
Then you
so many expenses.
You become, it's unfair. You end up down that.
Life's unfair, baby.
Yeah.
That's why we're here.
That's right.
So,
outstanding, mate. Jeez.
So, I think, I'm pretty sure we've covered that stuff off. You should now be able to become a professional property investor.
You've done your course. You've done your info.
Now, the other thing I get asked, which is a bit of like a holistic sort of viewy question, is like, should I be on interest only or should I be on principal and interest if I've got rental properties? So like accounting world, ex Luke, because Luke don't give a fuck what you do, you just do it. But accountants love telling people on interest only, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the tax deductible expense debt that you can claim on. So interest only, expense the whole lot, and then move any money you can. If you've still got debt on your own occupied, pay that down first.
Mm-hmm. That's tax efficiency.
Yep. Tax efficiency. I'm going to be a bit of like a, you know, controversial here and say like most people are using that as an excuse to like to save like $1,000 sometimes just not to pay down their fucking debt.
Yeah.
Like if you're getting into the game of leverage and debt, become a professional at paying it off. And you will thank yourself so much in the future. If you have the capacity to service debt, pay it off. Don't run it on interest only and like try and get cute over $1,000 tax saving and shit. Pay off an extra $20,000.
Yeah.
And if you are going to go interest only on the debt that you can, make sure you are disciplined enough to pay down the owner-occupied debt and get rid of that. You're just going to leverage it back up and go get another one anyway.
Well, that's the thing. Eventually, you're going to pay off that debt. And if you haven't been paying off the debt, how are you going to do it? You're going to have to sell some of the properties.
Yeah.
If you want to get back to no debt, you have to sell your stock. You
there's
have to sell your inventory.
Like, there's all these courses and, you know, social media sponsored posts that I see and I get asked about them a lot, like pay off your mortgage in 10 years. They go and buy 5 properties, they go up in value and then you sell off 2 and then pay off the debt. Like, fuck, how'd that work over the last 5 years? Everyone's in negative fucking equity now.
Yeah, I'll give you a good story that I think will make this make a bit more sense to people because I think the whole, or just do interest only, is, you know, it's all good and well where the market's roaring and you log in every week and it's like, oh, my house is worth more. Fuck yeah, why would I? You know, the debt's getting inflated away. And if you understand that, and of course, when we're talking about this, we're talking in general terms. So there will be some people that will really get just paying interest only. And that's what they want to do.
If you're skilled and you understand that and you know that you are inflating away your debt and you're being careful with leverage and making sure that you can service it regardless if something goes wrong, fine. Be my guest.
So here's an example of where it doesn't work. So someone I was speaking to, they had, say, 600K of debt and they were taught, you don't pay it off. It's a rental. Just pay the interest only. So they're like, oh, okay, well, happy days. So they would have $18,000 at 3% of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, well, yeah, we can stomach that. That's all good. Works well. We've got people renting it out. Happy days. Oh, when it started getting to 4.5, oh, geez, we've got to start topping it up a bit here.
Mm.
Oh, all of a sudden it went to 7. Oh, okay, $42,000 of interest.
Oof.
And they got to the point where they were like, well, this sucks. We're going to sell the joint. And so that's what they're doing. They're getting rid of it because they can't stomach the change in the interest, because we always, as humans, compare what we're doing today with what it used to be like. So if you've been told, oh, just pay the interest on it, don't worry about it, the unfortunate thing for them is the property hasn't moved that much too, and property is illiquid, which means it doesn't sell fast. Average sell time at the moment, I think, is around 60 days, has been 20 previously, so it's taking 3 times as long to get through stock. So they're going to the market saying, get rid of this thing because we're just sick of paying the interest. But, you know, if they sat on this for years, if over that time they had maybe paid down some of that debt instead of doing whatever with their additional funds, they might have been down to, let's say, a 400K debt when we started to get to that, you know, up to the...
There's two things there. All of a sudden, the top-up isn't as big, so you might have kept it. And the second thing is, if you did still want to sell it, you'd actually be able to pull some equity out of it.
Yeah.
And have some cash and go and put it in a term deposit or whatever you want to do with it, you know?
Yeah, so they've gone from 18% of interest, $18,000 of interest to 42, and if they had have maybe paid down some of that debt over those years, they would be looking at $28,000 of interest, which is another $10,000, which they'd probably stomach and go, oh, well, you know, and even if they did want to sell it, they're going to get back that 200K. But that's put a lot of pressure on them and they've been frustrated by it. So you can't just take mummy and daddy's and, oh, fuck, I've had a rental property before, or I know how it works, like their advice of just whatever worked for them, because the world's always changing.
Yeah.
Debt levels are different, interest rate levels are different, LVRs are different, all the shit that Mikey's just explained. So get current advice in the current market, in the future economy, not bloody Barry's been to bingo and he's ticked off everything where he's got the first rental, then we leveraged and got the second, and in 1993 we got our fourth one and it was so outstanding and piece of piss.
I think those times are probably coming again, but it is really important not to get stuck. And I guess the kind of purpose of this pod is, I think people are going to come back into the market with a vengeance at some point, and I just hope that they do it with some due diligence instead of gambling.
Yeah.
And just on that, you know what you have to pay when you sell that you didn't have to pay when you bought?
Real estate agent fees.
30 grand in real estate agent fees.
Cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
You know, so now you actually need to sell that 600 grand property that might not have gone too far for 630.
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. So go and listen to the true cost of buying a property.
Yeah.
We break down some of that stuff as well. I was going to say, mate, when the people, you know, are back with a vengeance in these property booming times and back at those open homes, I was going to go park my car out the front and rev it at them, but I realised I got a Tesla, so I can't do that.
You can borrow the Lambo, man.
Thanks. I might put the windows down and just play the podcast. Yeah. The true cost of buying a property, blasting out of the Tesla.
But what will happen, mate? We'll just start getting 1-star reviews and bloody people will just be like, those keep the change guys are idiots.
Yeah.
Tax-free gains over here, baby.
What a dick he is. Fair enough. But all I am about is trying to help people be armed with the education so that they think differently rather than just go, oh, me buy property, like that work.
Bullseye, man. That is 100%. I am a mortgage broker and I live and eat off this industry. I just have this part of me that is like, I've seen people rush to the market. I've seen people get hurt. All I'm telling you, I've actually also seen people do extremely well.
Mm,
like
we both have.
Way better in property and investing and stuff than I could have done. So there are people out there that are good at it and can do well, whether they're doing flips, whether they're doing rentals, whether they're stacking a portfolio, whatever it is, you can do well in it.
Yeah.
And if you want to do it, I 100% am like, man or lady, you fucking go smash it. But like you said, be armed.
Yeah. Know your shit.
Know your shit. Put the effort in and be successful at whatever you do.
Was that the end?
I think so.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Was that 55 minutes of property, mate?
You're a bit fuzzy, mate.
Yeah, I am. Hey, 5-star review on the way out. GuardianSmith.co.nz. If you do need some help in that space, if you need some accounting tax help, I'm not your guy, but I can tell you who is. Get in touch. I'll point you in the right direction depending on what you've got going on. Be good out there. Know your numbers. Know the rules. Learn how to play the game before you just go out there and make one of the biggest financial transactions you will do in your lifetime.